take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
I'm a super traveler. My pocket's on Fat Albert, but I'm a super traveler.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your I Can't See the Waves for All That Ocean of Music News and Criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I came up from my department where they trigger heavy. Bought my bitch a brand new Rolex and she still ain't heavy. Got that Cartier with diamonds and I'm laughing at you. 911 Turbo Porsche, cause I'm a super traveler.
Super Traveler by Future. One of about 79 Future songs that have come out so far in 2017. We're going to be talking this week about, we can do an Atlanta podcast, I feel, probably every 2 months, and it would never get old.
Every other week?
Yeah, it would never get boring. But there's been a lot that's been happening in this calendar year. So in order to ring it in correctly and to get all the gossip, we've got some guests today. I've got New York Times pop music reporter Joe Coscarelli.
I'm here.
I have Naomi Zeichner, editorial director of The Fader.
What up, what up, what up?
And TheFader.com. And I assume other assorted Fader properties.
Yeah,
all properties.
All the products.
Naomi, if a struggle rapper wants to hit you up, what's the best way for a struggle rapper to hit you up?
I feel like there's a couple people that they could hit me through. Honestly.
No, I'm not asking about that.
On email. On email.
Are you going to give it out?
No. I mean, I think a lot of people have guessed, and you probably could too.
Okay. So, struggle rappers take note. All my podcast listeners who are struggle rappers on the side. All right. So, let's start with Future. We're going to touch on Future today. We're going to touch on Migos. We're going to touch on Yachty. And we're going to touch on some other folks. We're all Slaughter Gang in our hearts. But let's start with Future. Future has put out two albums in the last 2 weeks. One is called Future. One is called Hundrix.
Sans vowels.
Yeah, just lose that part of the keyboard. They were put out in subsequent weeks. Future has already debuted atop the Billboard album chart. Hendrix is most likely, it seems, about to replace it. And that will be the first time in Billboard history that an artist has replaced him, her, or itself atop the Billboard chart with a second project. Joe, why is this important? And what does this tell us about where Future is in his current aesthetic place?
Well, before we get to the aesthetics, we can talk about the business.
Rocco?
We don't know anything about Rocco. Actually, I talked to Rocco's lawyer on the phone. We can get
just
to
as a brief sidebar, if you look at the first time I ever wrote about Future in the New York Times, it was for a concert he did at SOBs, which is his first New York show. Were you there, Naomi?
No.
Okay. You really looked, you had that look, though. Like you were like, yeah, no, okay. So anyway, I was there, and the photo, speaking of photo, good photo, the photo is shot from the crowd. And in between the photo, the camera and Future is a guy waving a whole lot of money.
That's Rocco.
I didn't know that at the time, but someone later, when I pointed it out on Twitter, was like, look, Future had fans. Here's a guy throwing all this money around.
Someone was
like, yeah, that's Rocco.
I think he was in my office that day, Rocco. Not
Rocco. Was he also waving a huge wad of cash that
no.
day? Oh, okay.
Rocco, for the listeners who may not know, is the man who brought us Future.
Yes. Definitely. A1 Records. Rocco also, UOENO.
A big lot of incredible
big
songs.
Record, Rocco, yeah. Rocco, like a good sort of like parallel history of Atlanta rap could be told through Rocco.
Fader and, pitches.
Yes, hashtag Fader pitches. Check that out in the summer issue. So let's start with the news and the legal stuff, and then we'll talk about the aesthetics.
We'll leave Future's legal problems to the side for now. What we're seeing with him putting out these two albums, which are both, I believe, over an hour long, both 17 tracks.
True story.
This is what the streaming era hath wrought. Future went
this
on
this. This is the real More Life.
Yes. This is
more
the playlist.
More and more life. And more.
The
and
endless
more life.
Playlist of Future music. He, went on this mixtape run, a year and a half ago, beginning about a year and a half ago, where he's putting out all this music. And it just so happens to coincide with this time when the Billboard chart is catching up with the way people consume these days, which is on streaming services, on YouTube, but also Spotify and Apple Music and sometimes Tidal. And
is that like A-E-I-O-U and sometimes why?
Yes.
Okay.
And so Future, by putting out these two albums back to back, you know, this is a man who's constantly in the studio. He never has a shortage of records to put out. But at this moment, he, you know, he'd been putting out so much music. Then he takes a little break. Mm-hmm. And just as soon as
people are
starting to say, you know, where's Future? He's been a little cold lately. He comes with two projects in a row, announcing them right before they come out. And because there are so many songs on this and because Future has such a dedicated online fan base, people are going to stream the hell out of these songs as soon as they come out. These are going to, you know, be played at parties, be played over and over again. They're repeatable.
Yes.
There's a vibe. There's, you know, there's two separate vibes on each album, which we'll talk about. And every song that's streamed a certain amount of times counts essentially as an album sale.
Yes.
And so this, especially because no other music is really coming out. It's the beginning of the year. Yeah. You know, people are still gearing up for summer and summer festivals and, you know, when people want to listen to music with the windows down.
Are you personally getting geared up for summer festivals right now?
I'm not, it's but March, some people are.
Dog, it's March 2nd.
See you at Fader Fort.
No, see Naomi.
See Naomi at
Fader Fort. See Naomi at Fader Fort.
Maybe you can get my email.
Yeah, Struggle Rappers. FYI. Hop the fence to Fader Fort and get Naomi's email.
So Future has very little competition, but he has a lot of songs. And if you're a popular artist and you have a lot of songs, mm-hmm. you're going to be number one on the Billboard chart right now. In a dead week. And he probably would have been number one, to be fair, on a not dead week.
Yeah, I think it would have taken an Ed Sheeran.
But it's a sort of flex to say, you know, I'm going to drop all of these songs.
Flex of Thunder.
Everybody's going to listen to it. And then I'm going to do the same thing again the next week.
Right. I'm going to set a record. I'm going to be on Ellen. I'm going to do all the things that 2 years ago maybe you thought I wouldn't have done.
Joe's a big fan of his Ellen performance, actually.
I actually thought it was very good.
Big fan.
But even better than his Saturday Night Live performance from a few months ago, mm-hmm. which I also thought was good.
So let's talk about the different energies of the two records. Future's Future feels very much, I don't want to say like holdovers from the DS2 era or from the 56 Nights era, but it is in that vein. It's, you know what the subject matter is. You know what the production is.
What's the subject matter?
should I quote what I wrote? I think it was Rolls Royces paid for with pocket money and women from various parts of the globe getting celebrated and mistreated in the same breath and diamonds that are glistening and wet.
Girlfriends getting stolen.
Yes, although
not his.
Not his.
Oh, no.
No. Rapper girlfriends. And really, if you're a rapper, maybe you just shouldn't have a girlfriend, because that just seems like it causes problems on both ends. Sidebar. So anyway, that's Future by Future. Hendrix by Future is, what is it? It's like Hear My Dear.
Yes.
Like it's a tortured record about the dissolution of a high-profile relationship that resulted in a child and a tremendous amount of animus, or at least that's what it seems like. It's Future's Lemonade.
Sure, which he's done a few times now.
Who's written that take? Who's written that take?
I don't know if that take holds. I don't know if it
holds
up.
Hold
up? Okay, I don't know.
Talk to us, man.
Tell us.
I mean, well, like, Lemonade is a, you know, carefully orchestrated art museum that was, like, trying to be something unique. I think for me, like, Hendrix, there's always, Future's always had two modes. And he's always
it's beast mode, and what's the other one?
Like, Mike Will one time referred to it as, like, his Phil Collins mode.
Mm.
Like, which I don't know if that holds up either, but that's how, you know, it's sort of, it's the turn on the lights. It's, you know, even, like, the song My Darlin' from the Miley album.
Mm-hmm. Party.
Slept On.
Yeah, or IBU from Honest. You know, I think he's been in that mode for a long time as well. Or even Good Morning, the song that went on to become Drunk in Love, that is the greatest lost Future song of all time.
True.
So I think on Hendrix, he's just kind of doing that. And actually, I mean, my like conspiracy theory about this whole double album thing is before Honest was Honest and before it came out, Future, and before Future ever went on tour with Drake, which also feels just like a significant
of course
timeline, he was going to do a double mixtape called Super Future, Fire Marshal Future. Mm-hmm. And I think those were like, if we're choosing one of these lanes, presumably those would have both been in this kind of like piped up future lane. Mm-hmm. This was also before the child was named Future. And then the album was going to be Future Hendrix. And, you know, going to be in this sort of like more adventurous, broad pop star mode. And obviously that didn't happen. The album became Honest. You know, like there's a narrative that it was a brick, even though I don't really agree with that narrative.
Honest is a great record.
Agree.
Honestly. It's very hard to hear people talk down on Honest.
Yeah.
When at the time
it's a little bit of a straw man, though, because I don't really see these people talking down about it. I know that this has become crystallized in the narrative that Future had to do this mixtape run to redeem himself from a failed major label album, but everybody likes Honest, right?
I mean, not on Twitter.
I think Honest like did it. Maybe wasn't Future Hendrix. It wasn't what it was supposed to be. And I like even like Good Morning was supposed to be on it, and then it wasn't. Like I think that. I don't have any, like, real knowledge, but it does seem like some parts of how that came out, like, weren't maybe as intended, and that's part of that narrative as
it's
well.
It's a
that
messy
it wasn't
major
even
label
what,
album.
What
but also, like,
to be.
Imagine Honest in the form that it came out last year or this year.
Or people yesterday. People would be, yeah, like, you know.
So
yeah.
Just ahead of his time.
Seeing people call Hendrix Future's best album ever, I mean, not, I think it's nice, but I was a little,
no, that's
like,
not, that's incorrect.
I thought that was a little.
That's non-factual.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Is that on the Russia Today list?
So yeah, like I don't know. I mean, that's just kind of like my context for both of these projects, and I think it's interesting. Like, as much as this is like a perfect strategy for today, it seems like some kind of like a plan that he had in his back pocket, and potentially songs he had in his back pocket, because like we have a lot of detail production.
Yes,
and that was, you know, he was working with detail when he was working on Honest, like, and not to say that these are stale songs, but like they could be things that you know, he's in the studio a lot now, but he was in the studio a lot before too, and these might be songs that are kind of picked up and worked on over time.
What really struck me about listening to these albums, I feel like every time I've wrote about Future in like 2013, 2014, 2015, the argument that I felt like I had to make on his behalf was an aesthetic argument. It was like, I know you think Future doesn't have bars, but he kind of has bars. I know you think Future's not an innovator, but here are these technical things that he does that are fascinating. I know you think the Future's a bad songwriter, but here's his approach to hook writing that's actually much more interesting than all his peers in the city. And listening to these two records, I felt like I couldn't make an additional innovation argument, and I began to wonder why. And part of me wonders if it's because the songs actually do date from that era, or at least the concepts date from that era. But then that's what got me thinking a little bit more about the project of Future, like capital P, like the project. And I was joking with Joe a few minutes before you showed up, Naomi. I was just like, when I was listening to the two albums back to back for the first time, like after Hendrix came out, I'd listened to Future a few times. When I was listening to them together, I was like, oh, it's like the Iliad. It's just like one long story. It's just long. It's long AF. You know, it just goes and goes and goes. And it's like returning to a bunch of familiar themes. And that's where I started to think like, oh, like Future is, he's a feeling at this point. And I think in 2013, maybe that wasn't true because we were still sort of parsing what is he doing that's different, that's new. But the fact that he's still releasing music with such density, still manages this ubiquity, even in his fallow period, was sort of like popping up in places. Like he was never, I feel like when Thug goes away, like Thug just goes away. He's just like not visible. But Future always is like a little bit visible. It just got me thinking about like the Future project being fundamentally different from like the Drake project or the Kanye project. Like there is a sort of persistence about Future.
And yet when you talk about this being a long story, it's not necessarily a linear story.
No, not at all.
It's a story that you can pick and choose from. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing about putting out so many songs at once is like, it's like a choose your own adventure. You can build the Future album of your dreams out of these 30 some odd songs. And if you wanted to make a tight 12 with four of Phil Collins' Future and four of Super Trapper Future, you could do that.
Yep.
But that destroys the fun. And it's like I remember now, I think when I was writing about these albums, I was able to articulate something that I maybe knew on some subcutaneous level in 2015 when I made my album of the year, all the Future albums and mixtapes. And I thought it was just sort of like a weird flex to do. But I think I understand now, it's like you cannot take Beast Mode without 56 Knights. You cannot take DS2 without What a Time to Be Alive. Like, they all literally are part of the same narrative. It's like a mini series. And that's a way that Future works that I don't think most of his peers work.
At the same time, commercially, it's fun to watch the songs sort of bubble up that are going to become the trademark songs of that era. Like, when he put out 56 Nights, Beast mm-hmm. Mode, Monster, all of those. Like, there's an A list of songs that just became the Future songs that, you know, people love from that time, whether it's Codeine Crazy or March Madness, yes. obviously came out of that time. And then so you could see that in a microcosm in these last 2 weeks where, like, I think Mask Off sort of became mm-hmm. the first one to bubble up. I don't know. How do you keep an eye on that sort of thing, Naomi?
On the, like, folklore of Future.
Yeah.
I mean, and which, I also think it's not just the songs, right, the too. It's like, it's also his outfits and, like, his aesthetic. But he really has, and in a way, like, you know, he does have so many children in kind of, and he is, like, one of the first.
Not literal children.
No, well, I mean, maybe.
I was going to say, speak on it.
No.
Spill that tea. Like,
but
oh,
I mean, but if he has so many actual children, it's because he's kind of, like, wooed women all over the world as this true international superstar. But I actually wanted, just in thinking about the narrative, that what's interesting to me is that for a while, Future was actually specifically a linear narrative. Like, this whole, like, gone to the moon, Pluto, I'm going straight up. The first years of Future were all about, like, I'm getting out of here and I'm going somewhere. Yeah. And, like, I'm going to a place where I can take you shopping in Miami tomorrow. And I actually think, like, for me, and maybe this is, like, just nostalgia and it's a broken lens, but, like, I loved that era of Future. Like, it felt very, made, you know, me feel good. It made me feel optimistic and good about myself. And that's something I enjoy in rap music in general. And then I think there was, like, a point where he achieved a certain amount of success after Pluto. And then it became about, like, introspection. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to be Future. And I think that is, like, a little less genuine, because I don't think what Future is about peeling back the layers. I think it is just, like, a vibe, you know, and it is a folklore, and almost to the extent that it's not genuine, it's really nice. So I don't know. But Incredible, that's the name of the song that everybody loves. Mm-hmm. I mean, that beat is, like, definitely super weird and interesting. There's a Metro Boomin beat at the end of Hendrix called Sorry. I think the song is Sorry, mm-hmm. that I think is a very, like, it was an exciting beat to hear from Metro Boomin. Mm-hmm. It felt, like, genuinely experimental.
I feel like it's interesting. Okay, so just as a sidebar, I feel like we should talk about Metro since we're talking about Atlanta. Metro's in an interesting place right now, because I think post-21, I saw an interview with him where he's just like, I want to hear people rapping and telling real stories, which I don't think is, like, a sub at Thug or a sub at Future, but it's, like, it's interesting.
Could
and
be,
like,
taken that way.
Yeah, and it's like, what 21 does is fundamentally different than what Future and Thug do. And we should listen, we talked about Mask Off. Let's actually listen to Mask Off, which is one of the Metro beats on Future.
My guillotine. Drink from Melton's in, taking beans, yeah. Go to those extremes,
let's go.
Parliament. Calamari wins, yeah. Parlay in Vegas, we was in attendance,
let's go.
Before the business, yeah. Theodore Lenz, Theodore prescriptions, yeah. Focus on the mission, put my intermission. Hold on.
Okay, so that was Mask Off, and when I first heard it, when the beat came in, my literal first thing was like, why is this Rock Marciano song playing on my iTunes right now? This makes no sense. And then Future started rapping, and then it was very strange. And I think we're in an interesting moment for Metro, where Metro is almost pushing against the trap sound and trying to find a new pocket. And now his new pocket may in fact be late 90s, early 2000s New York. Like, I don't know.
I'll take it.
But yeah, but it's, I don't know what his interpretation of that is going to be, but certainly the beats that he contributed to these projects, some of them veer into very non-Atlanta territory.
Well, Metro Boomin, he's a smart guy. You know, he's seen these producer sounds come and go.
Lex Luger.
He knows what happened to Lex Luger, which is every song on the radio sounded like, every song on the radio was Lex Luger, and then every song on the radio sounded like Lex Luger, and same thing happened with
DJ Mustard,
exactly. And he knows that if he wants to remain the top rap producer, which he, I would say, pretty indisputably is at this moment, that he has to switch up quickly before the copycats come and before people are sick of it, basically.
And I think he's watched people like Future kind of use the tools available to them. And that's something that I do think is like distinctive to Atlanta, but that maybe like, you know, either literally people come to studios in Atlanta to get or have tried to replicate elsewhere. But like, you know, Future had a Mike Will moment and then he had a Metro Boomin moment and, you know, whatever. And I think like Metro as a producer and almost as an A&R knows how to do that to kind of like, you know, pair up with Savage or pair up with mm-hmm. Southside or whatever and kind of like, you know, spend time with Zaytoven, like learn and vibe with somebody who's going to, you know, be a good, like, a in good faith creative collaborator and to right. get something out of that and to try to offer listeners something in the process. And I think that's like, it's really important. And I'm glad that Metro kind of has like a leadership role in that at this point in the Atlanta community.
And not coincidentally, he just announced that he is starting his own record label and imprint and that yeah. he will be sort of bringing up and nurturing artists in that way.
Is it meaningful, just to tie, to put a bow on the Future part of the conversation, is it meaningful either for Future's career or for hip-hop more broadly that a guy like him with his aesthetic can top the Billboard charts? Because this is a thing that I think when Future was at his creative peak, which I don't think is the current moment, which I think is 24 months ago, there was a certain antagonism between him and even the mainstream of hip-hop, not just to say cross-genre charts. Does it just mean he successfully gamed the system and it's like it's sort of a shrug, or is it actually meaningful in the bigger picture way?
I don't know. It's almost like, to me, it's just that trends take actually a really long time still, you know, and that
late past America.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, if you chip it, like Chance the Rapper is almost a similar case. Like, you know, you can be indie for forever and ever, and then finally, you know, they'll give you a Grammy. Like,
is he independent, Chance the Rapper? Oh, that's crazy.
I think he's.
I had no idea.
I think. Yeah.
How would I know that?
There's a bit of that, but I do think Future has always been about his money. He's always been a businessman, and he's taken that to many different scales. And I do think that, like, even when I remember that moment where he and Drake, before they went on tour for the first time, were having this sort of back and forth, yeah. and you know, whatever was true or not, it was like Future was a little resistant to the idea of becoming like a stadium artist, and now is obviously not resistant to that at all and is going to go on his own arena tour. Like, I think that he's fully embraced himself as this kind of character. And it's even like when he was on SNL, I was so amazed that they booked that, but obviously he had to like bring The Weeknd with him, you know, and maybe next time he won't have to, but
notorious socially acceptable party guest The Weeknd.
Right. I also think the rules changed and they caught up to him. Like when he made Honest, the rules, if you wanted to cross over from being a street rapper to being a radio rapper, is you had to have R&B hooks. You had to have a lot of guests on your album. There are a ton of guests
on
Honest.
Or be the guest on someone else's record.
Right. Or you had to make Move That Dope, which was like such a weird mm-hmm. song for him to make
right,
at that time.
Right, with Pharrell. You had to get a Pharrell mm-hmm. song. You know, you had to make all these concessions. And then the way that the metrics started changing.
Yes, the accounting changes.
And labels obviously saw the value in giving artists more freedom, you know, whether it's a Drake who says, you know, I don't talk to my label. I just do my music and I give it to them and then they put it out. That became the dominant mode if you could prove that you had a big enough groundswell of support.
Yep. Right. And kids started promoting music better than labels,
yes.
you know, and sort of like
data. That's how they'd like you to think it is.
Sure. Yeah. But I think that there's like more evidence these days for something being chic. And something being bookable on television or, you know, a reason to put a
right.
rapper
it's
in a fashion
show. It's easy to see how popular they are.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Drake and his relationship with Future, and Future has said recently, you know, that they're great business partners, which they undoubtedly are, and we saw that in the mixtape they put out together. The other major relationship that Future has had in this time period, which we've alluded to, you said, "Here, my dear," but we haven't explicitly talked mm-hmm. about is this Sierra character who sort of
am I supposed to see this lame happy so sit around think about how I ain't happy.
So John, can you talk a little bit about the role that Sierra plays as, you know, a cipher or sort of an antagonist for Future and how long he can continue to play that off? Because I think after Hendrix, maybe he needs a new subject.
So here's the thing, like part of the symbolic growth of Future in the public marketplace was his viability as a celebrity romantic partner, right? So, you know, Future was involved when I first interviewed Future 5 years ago or 4 years ago. I think he was involved with like his local girlfriend or baby moms, or I don't remember who it was, but it was like just whoever he'd been involved with, whoever was like around. And at some point, Future started becoming successful, and then it becomes weirdly viable for Future. He's at fashion shows. He's making a lot of money on the road. He's partners with Drake. All of a sudden, he's someone who desires to have arm candy. He's viable in that space. So him and Sierra had a relationship that lasted a year, maybe?
It was an intense year for all of us. Was it less, even?
No, it was definitely like a year at least.
And they have a son. And that was part of Future's growth in public. You know, that's like a Q rating boost in a sense. And the fact that Future was considered basically part of a celebrity power couple. Yeah, that's something that boosted his overall profile. And I think also in a weird way, you look at Future's relationship with not just R&B, but female fans. You know, Future's primary relationship with women pre-Sierra in music is vis-a-vis the strip club. In the Sierra moment, then post, all of a sudden you start getting these like post Drake kind of, or the Honest songs, but also the Drake and post Drake.
He could be
songs.
Romantic when he yeah, wants to.
He can choose, like you say, the Phil Collins version of him. So I think that altered fundamentally his profile, even though like the songs that aren't like that are about the agony of being that guy in public and knowing that in your heart you're not really that guy. That's actually where I wish there was a great Future interview, because I feel like when he lets slip his awareness of the gap between public Future and private Future in music, it's moving and it's super, super intense. But I feel like he very rarely lets that slip in an interview context. I feel like now is a time when I also want to bring up what I think is a great underreported conspiracy theory about the breakup of Future and Sierra, which involves Hanalei Mustaparta. Are you guys up on this?
She's like the Italian. Is she the fashion person?
Yeah, she's the fashion person.
Yeah, I remember that.
So
I think I still follow her on Instagram because of it.
Yeah, are you guys up on this thing where Page Six reported that she was basically the cause of the Future Sierra split, and it's in print, but it never made it online?
Wow.
I'm just saying.
I haven't seen it.
It's on my Instagram, dog. Go check that out.
I'm gonna find it. How far back?
Scroll back. It's there.
If you get that deep like, it was a slip of the finger.
That's all right. No, I know it's a slip of the heart. I just feel like let's throw that out there just to maybe if you have some information, email us, podcast@nytimes.com. We'd love to hear more.
But I am curious about how long you think Future can maintain his villain character.
But this is the thing. So what happened with Sierra was it imploded in such spectacular fashion. And
lawsuits. There
are lawsuits and public recriminations and the song Throwaway. Yeah, there's just a tremendous amount of animus coming out of Future. But I do think after Hendrix, which is basically about the dissolution of that relationship, I don't want to hear him sing rapping about Sierra 18 months from now.
Naomi?
No, I think it's a big open question for me. And as a huge fan of his, like, I feel a little anxious on his behalf about it, sort of, you know. And I think maybe, like, if I'm just, like, fan fictioning what I would do next if I was Future, I would, like, try to lean into maybe a more international sound. Like, I actually really liked the youth. Not, like, we're not, like, doing,
like, one dance people,
like, Pitbull?
No,
like, Flo Rida?
No, but, I mean, I even liked Used to This a lot. Like, I thought that felt authentic to him. Like, you're a super famous model-esque
he's
like bon vivant, like,
so
kind
beautiful.
Of
my god, he's beautiful.
Yeah, like, and you're also not a kid, which is cool, and sort of like, tell me more about that lifestyle of freedom.
So let's talk about the Flames J Balvin collabo coming soon.
Yes, exactly.
We're calling
on
it
the
now.
Fast and the Furious.
Call Mr.
Yeah, like
Easy.
Fast and Furious 9.
You know, get J-Hus in there.
Hell yeah, we're into it.
It's hot. I just think, yeah, like, and I, you know, he's obviously an incredible songwriter who can do really interesting things with interesting beats. So, you know, yeah, I'm excited.
So Future's number one on the album charts, and that's almost quaint because
What's an album?
Yeah, exactly. And I think there are three other guys from Atlanta who are looking and saying, yeah, we just did that. But we did that on the hotter chart. And that's Quavo, and that's Takeoff, and that's Offset, and this is Bad and Bougie.
Records on records, got backers on backers. I'm riding around in a coupe. I take your right from you. You, I'm a dog. Woo. Beat the walls loose. Hey. Hop in the fall. Woo. I tell that come for me.
Come for me.
I swear these is under me. Hey. The hate and the devil keep jumping me.
Jumping me.
Back rows on me, keep me company.
Cash.
Hey, we did the most.
Most.
Yeah. Pull up and goes.
Woo.
Yeah. My diamonds a choker.
Bah.
Holding up, I with no holster.
Bah.
Read the ruler, diamond cooler.
Cooler.
This a roller, not a mule.
Hey.
Dabbing on them like the usual.
Damn.
Magic with the brick do voodoo.
Magic.
Courtside with a bad bitch.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made. Or how a wooden table is built, piece by piece. And in not-so-small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Migos topped the Billboard Hot 100 before Future dropped the Billboard album chart.
They topped the album chart as well.
Yes.
1 week.
Yes, but it does feel, it feels of a feather that all of these things are happening.
And
at the
right
same
before
time.
Migos, Black Beatles by yes. Ray Sherman.
Atlanta by proxy.
Sure.
Yes.
Mike
Will. Honorary. Registered in two states. Registered in Mississippi and registered in Georgia. What happened? Why did Migos end up at the top? I mean, and not the meme. I don't want the meme answer. I don't think the meme answer really is sufficient. Let's talk about how Bad and Bougie really ended up at the top of the Billboard charts.
Donald Glover. I don't know. It's the best song ever. Like, I mean,
oh, it's B minus Migos. That's the problem. It's not even great.
I totally
Migos.
Disagree.
You think it's
I
like
actually,
an A plus Migos record?
I'm not. I don't know if it's like the best Migos record.
You think it's top 10?
Yes.
I mean, Migos.
Top
that's a hard.
Migos
that's
songs?
Migos is like a hard, way
yeah,
harder.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's good. Something that I think Migos do very well is kind of like build songs that have sort of like five interweaving parts where mm-hmm. like things are coming in and out. And Offset in particular, actually, I think does that very well mm-hmm. and kind of has a couple. There's a couple Migos songs. Like One Time, I think, is a very slept on Migos song where Offset kind of like comes in with his own separate harmony or whatever and does his own thing. Like, and I think that's why Bad and Bougie is so good, because you almost like forget about Raindrop Drop Top, and then like 4 minutes in, you're like, whoa, it's back. Oh my God, my mind is blown. Like, there's so many mm-hmm. good parts of this song.
But what I think you're getting at is about.
Is that anything on the YRN tape is better than Bad and Bougie?
Sure.
Oh.
And I'll say Hot Take T-shirt better than Bad and Bougie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
but
I'll accept that.
The business of Migos, if we want to rewind, they present an interesting counterpoint to the way Future has done things recently, which is put out a ton of music. Migos, they were doing that. They were putting out a ton of music a few years ago.
And there was a time, 3 to 4 years ago, where there was like a credible narrative about Migos, not totally accurate, but it's basically like because of Versace and because Drake got on Versace, that Drake broke Migos out of regional fame into something more broad. And I think there's probably valid arguments on both sides of that. They were probably already moving in that direction, and Drake just put some kerosene on fire. But that was a credible argument at the time. And now that just seems literally eons ago.
Right. Well, that at the time, again, and this is sort of not far from when Future was putting out Honest, and it was a different, it was a different business still, and we hadn't fully moved into the streaming era. And I think Migos' regional fame did have a ceiling on it. And part of that is the sound. You know, their mixtapes at the time are pretty one note. You know, they did one thing very well, mm-hmm. high energy, fast rap songs for the Ship Club or for the Club
Fight
Club.
Club.
Or for Fight Club, yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, they had some bumps along the road. They put out an album that was pretty much a disaster, sloppy, had weird guests, weird beats. They tried to do too many things. It wasn't the right time.
It was the definition, and this is something that I think the music business has struggled with, which is trying to grow a group like Migos through the framework of growing Wiz Khalifa or The Lox or something. You know, it's the politics of the early to mid 2000s imposed upon a scene that has no need for those politics and imposed upon a public that is actually quite used to getting its music direct from the source and is not worried about whether Keisha Cole is on the record. That's just not a thing that's relevant.
So along with those artistic struggles, they also had legal problems, you know.
Offset.
Sure. Arrests at inopportune times, you know, sort of not realizing the spotlight that had been put on them and behaving accordingly. You know, it took them a little bit to get used to that, I think, which they have owned up to, and that their, you know, their team and their management have really made a point of saying, you know, we had to sit them down and say, like, things are different now, you have to act differently. Now, the other thing they did was they stopped putting out music. Mm-hmm. They, not entirely, but as Migos, they were no longer flooding the market with mixtapes, with full projects. And you basically had a year there with almost no Migos music. You know, you have some leaks here, but notably, you do have Quavo, sort of the de facto leader of the group, popping up on songs by everyone from Justin Bieber and mm-hmm. Post Malone to, you know, Travis Scott,
Post
Young Thug.
Post Malone's a banger.
It's a great song. Good video, too. Congratulations. That's the song. I'm not saying congratulations.
And also congratulations.
I do not
congratulations.
Agree with that.
You don't like that song?
No, we watched the video the other day. But the song is amazing.
So also, they was it you guys who did like the featuring Quavo playlist or whatever?
We did debut that mix, and oh my god, I feel so badly that I don't remember
the DJ's
name
right
now. But yeah,
but shouts to you,
him.
Whoever you
he's
are,
amazing, and look up featuring Quavo on SoundCloud because it's
very
incredible,
very
work.
Essential document of our times.
Yep.
So Migos is both withdrawing from the marketplace to, you know, have demand rise again, basically, and also spreading their wings creatively and working individually instead of as a trio and popping up, you know, with different musicians from different scenes and sort of taking little bits from all of that. And then slowly started to put music back out. And one of the first songs that came was Bad and Bougie. And then it had a pretty amazing natural rise, which, you know, they said their plan was to go back to basics a little bit. They brought it to the strip club in Atlanta. They worked it there, sort of builds regionally. Then they wait to put it out officially for a holiday weekend when a lot of the radio shows are going to be playing new music because they're doing mixed shows and, you know, the DJs are off, basically, and someone has to play the music. So that leaves an opening for new songs. A lot of people are in their cars or listening to the radio. This was going back to last fall. And basically, they let this song grow organically. And then, as you alluded to, you get the memes and it becomes a sort of calling card for them. And then they're ready to put an album behind it. And they didn't stop recording in that time when they weren't putting out any music. So they had a lot
songs
to choose from. When it came to, and with the line falling between what's an album and what's a mixtape, and you can sell it all now online, and mostly people are going to stream it anyway, the process was just different. And again, like, the industry sort of caught up to what they were doing a few years ago, and they just had to take a time out and wait for the right moment to strike again.
I also think there is a slight aesthetic difference between Bad and Bougie and sort of what to me still feel like peak Migos. There was something about the early mixtapes up until the first album, which is, you know, like, it's a smudge. Like, let's just pretend it didn't happen. But that thing, Naomi, that you were talking about of, like, weaving multiple ideas, but it also, they all felt like Royal Rumbles. Like, they really just felt like almost like three guys on one mic sometimes. Like, there was the way...
That's what we're doing to record this podcast.
Yes, we're all on one. On beats one today. So that always struck me, because that's not something we've actually heard a lot of really from any, you know, even if like you think of classic duos or classic trios, like they're interweaving, but they're not stepping on each other. And Migos, I always felt, was like just on the edge of stepping on each other. And I think that's what made their initial success so confusing to a lot of like rap traditionalists, because their structural elements were not very structured, or at least they were like collapsing buildings into each other.
But I think that chaos that was appealing to you was also holding them back a little bit commercially, right? Because people couldn't differentiate between the three of them. Mm-hmm. And something, if you listen to Culture, their new album, one thing you really see that you didn't see in previous Migos releases, there's a lot of use of empty space.
Yes.
And Bad and Bougie does it well, exactly. T-Shirt does it well, and it's more rudimentary for pop listeners, yes, to be able to catch the wave of the song when there's space in between.
My exact point about Bad and Bougie, which is just it does that with blank space.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a little bit of a dark tone to the whole album, which I think we have seen Migos in this very classic, like, you know, they released a lot of classic mixtapes. They often ended their mixtapes with sort of like a more reflective, like, song for your grandma, you know, like I in a lot of ways, like, I always just think of them as like three kids
grandma,
sitting on a couch at their grandma's house. Like, they talk a lot about the women in their lives. I don't know. That's a tangent. But like this whole, I mean, the tour that they're going to do, or the big shows that they're doing around the record, they're like playing with a full band, which is always the worst thing. But it worked. Like, you know, you have Beethoven on a keytar, and it's actually like super sick, because there is just this like chunky, bluesy sound that does sound a little bit more mature and a little dark. And like, I think this second jail stint that Offset did was legitimately dark and super fucked up. And, you know, I think that they've grown as a result in an interesting way, and in that they are more worldly and more adult than they used to be.
So Offset and Cardi B, the new future in Sierra?
I don't think so. I think they're both, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I did, I will say that one of my favorite, I mean, Migos have worked so hard to promote this record, you know, like I do think this has been just a smart strategy from A to Z. And that one of the things that they did in New York during album release week was this women-only Bad and Bougie party.
What?
And I'm very happy
we
to
not
say...
Invited.
Were you aware of the
it
world?
Was,
I knew it was
they
that.
Did
I
one in LA,
on
too.
Damn.
It was a great party, and I was standing next
Tell
to Cardi B.
Tell us about
B.
the party. Yeah.
I was standing next to Cardi B, and they put on her single, and she was so excited. And
Featuring Offset.
No, well, now it is, but it wasn't.
It wasn't at the time.
And so they play her single Lick, and she's, you know, she's like rapping along. Takeoff is at the hotel sleeping, because everybody needs to sleep sometimes. Mm-hmm. But Offset and Quavo, I have to say, were just so very genuinely excited for her, you know? And I think that is the kind of genuine excitement that they have for like lots of artists. And that's another thing about Migos that I don't think people, like, over the years, they've worked with a lot of people. Chance the Rapper loves them. Like, you know, DJ Khaled.
Is now the time to mention Calvin Harris?
Calvin Harris loves them. You know, they're the kind of people who win over other musicians because they genuinely get excited about music, and they seemed genuinely excited about Cardi that night. And so whether that relationship lasts 2 days or 2 years, I think, there actually is like a kernel of truth there, which I think is sweet, I guess.
You think of maybe more like a collabo album more than a two-year relationship.
John, do you think of Future and Migos in dialogue at all? Because it's strange, like they sort of exist in separate universes, yeah, even though they're popular at the same time, came up, you know, semi-parallel and are from the same city, work with the same producers, and yet...
It's funny, I don't know that I thought about it so directly before you just asked, but I don't. I feel like they do feel like different generations. It's, I mean, it literally almost is like blues and rock and roll. They don't seem to really be talking to each other. And I feel like Future, first of all, like Future is like so blatantly on his own trip.
Such a loner, sure.
Like, yeah, you know, Future's not even really in dialogue with Thug, who like theoretically is the person he should be in some kind of dialogue
though
with.
Instagram says they've been in the studio recently, so we might get something out of that.
That's phenomenal, and that's like a dream for all of us. But I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if you told me Future didn't listen to rap music, I might believe you. Like, it's a credible
100%.
Yeah, it's totally
plausible.
The
silence between them is like deafening. Like, I don't know what's going on there. But
do you think it's business, music, legal, street?
It's, I really don't want to guess there, but there I would say that there's something. But I think
they
like
both
Migos,
rap and triplets,
all of the above.
Well, yeah, and I do think that Future was known early on as an innovator, and I think that anybody else doing innovative things may be a little bit inherently threatening because of that. And I don't know what that means, but you know, I think that everybody wants to defend their space and their territory and do their own thing. But Gucci Mane was like this godfather in Atlanta that Migos directly came out of. They worked a lot at his studio. You know, they're managed by a guy who used to manage Gucci Mane. And I think that, you know, Gucci did actually, you know, Gucci is sort of like he finds all the ingredients in Atlanta and makes sure that he has his hand on them. And you know, he did a collaborative tape with Future early on. But Future has always kind of, yes, been very much in his own. He records, or he used to record in Atlanta in a studio that they call the Bat Cave, which is like, it's literally like far apart and a higher wall than other places, you know. So I think that, yeah, that's like since the beginning of his career always been true. And Migos kind of came out of something that was always explicitly collaborative.
All right. So to sort of wrap up our talk about Migos before we move on, let's listen to Out Your Way from Culture.
I put this weight on like I put a cape on. Now that this fame came, I can see the hate on you. Mama told me stay strong. Grandma told me stay on. Now she looking down, throwing blessings. You always going out your way. You always dropping off your flag, yo. You always going out your way. You never ask me to repay, no. You always going out your way, yeah, yeah. Ooh, you always going out your way.
All right, so now we're going to move from one Atlanta youth crew to another Atlanta youth. Let's talk about Lil Yachty, who maybe, for all I can tell, doesn't listen to any of these guys.
Lil Yachty only Coldplay,
yeah,
from the time that I spent with him.
In his own universe. You listen to Yachty, and his value proposition comes from the same place as all of your favorite Atlanta rappers, but raps like he's on a Bob the Builder episode or something. What exactly is going on with Yachty, and why did Yachty somehow, why was he able to thrive in an ecosystem that was still prizing what someone like Future was doing, what someone like Thug was doing, what something like what Migos was doing? Because when I remember, I mean, Yachty's been a thing for, 15 months, 16? I mean, really not a very long time.
Yes.
And the ascent has been outrageous, you know, from SoundCloud songs to Target ad campaigns, and Sprite ad campaigns. Was Yachty so sort of sui generis that he could sort of bypass all the traditional gatekeepers, even in Atlanta, which is not really prized gatekeeping? Or is he moving through a different audience set than Migos and Future and Thug? What's happening?
I think it is a different audience. You mentioned Future and Migos seeming like a generation apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Yachty is the next generation. And these are, of course, we're talking about Atlanta rap. So it's micro.
Yeah, it's like every 12 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or
six.
Yeah,
yes.
Or fewer. Yeah. But Yachty's fans are young. They are extremely young. He's now 19, right? So he was, you know, 17 and a half maybe when his song One Night started taking off on SoundCloud. It was, you know, one of the first songs he'd ever written or put out. And it's not a coincidence that you mention his music in the same breath as a cartoon, because he is a cartoon character. And he, before music, he was about sort of crafting a brand and a character. And he's known, you know, for his red braids with the beads, and you know, he's always wearing his Nautica. He has this sailing team, which he calls his group of friends and collaborators. He was a master of packaging before he was a rapper. And he grew up in, you know, a fairly nice suburb. You know, he's close with both of his parents. He's, you know, maybe got in some trouble as a kid, he doesn't claim to be coming from the trap, which was has been where the previous generations of Atlanta have been born out of. And he's just not about that. He's about positivity. His songs are, you know, more melodic than sort of this nihilistic growling.
He's a Technicolor character. Yes. I mean, that's like the most important thing about Yachty is he was identifiable. Like, he was memeable, reducible to an illustration. Like, he was all of these things in a way that a lot of people don't do. It's like he instinctively understood that self-presentation was actually the way in the door. And my favorite sort of story about, like, the Yachty self-invention myth was, you know, he's in college and, like, looking at Instagram at all these, like, cool parties that are happening in New York and, like, seeing who's at these parties, and basically tells his friend, like, who's moved to New York, like, you have to go to this party. You've got to meet that person. And it's not like you have to go meet Lior Cohen.
Yeah, not a record executive.
Yeah, or even like ASAP Ferg. Like, it's like you have to meet this like kid who has like 700 followers on Instagram, who's like clearly a cool kid who's like in the right rooms.
Right.
And like that's, and he's just like, I'm going to talk my way into those rooms, and that's actually how I'm going to get on.
He's a marketer and he's a marketing tool, which is why I think, you know, his ascent hasn't been about putting out a ton of music and watching which songs get streamed the most, although he has that too, on a smaller scale. But he's more, as you said, in ad campaigns. He's in a Sprite commercial with LeBron James. He's in a Target commercial with Carly Rae Jepsen. He's repping for Nautica at Urban Outfitters. Like he's very aware of all of this. And when I sat down and talked with him, you know, he said, I don't drink, I don't smoke. He's a teenager, he's underage, but he also is very aware of his image because he knows that these deals come because he's a little bit cuddly.
So you think that that's completely self-conscious?
Yeah.
Self-aware,
yes.
Rather.
I think yes. So. Yeah. His father is a photographer, right, in Atlanta, and I don't think there's like a sinister layer of this, but I do think that like he grew up in a household that understood how storytelling happened in a myth-making city,
totally,
like Atlanta.
And his dad told me that his dad mostly shot musicians. So there's a great throwback that I saw recently of a child, Little Yachty as a child with John Legend, like at a photo shoot. And he looks about, you know, 9 or 10, and John Legend looks the same because he's an adult. Sorry, that was a tangent. But yeah, his dad said that, you know, they used to go to shop for CDs, and they would talk mostly about the album art, and they would talk about, you know, who was presenting in what way, and they would get in the car and they would rip them up, and they would rip through the booklet and look at the
Yachty raps, am I the only one that still cares
exactly
about cover art?
Exactly. I didn't get to put that in my piece. It's a little niche,
damn,
but it's true that Yachty cares about cover art.
Wow. Heavy cosign.
Think though that there was like the Ebros of the world or whatever are so, they're even more perturbed. Hi Ebro, are even more perturbed by Yachty than they ever were by a Future or Amigos, because the thing is that Future,
why
Amigos,
are you talking about these mumble rappers?
Even if they did have a different style than New York rappers, were still like experts and innovators and thought of themselves as rappers. And in some ways, like, you know, it's not even just that he doesn't think of himself as, you know, Yachty has taken great care to say, I'm like not trying to be a rapper, but it's not even just that he is more melodic than he is tough. It's like there's a different attitude about expertise that I think is emblematic of like the generation that's younger than me, for instance, you know, like,
yeah.
And that it's sort of like, I'm not in this to be the best. I'm just in this to meet cool people.
To be the most.
To be myself, to be free and hang out with people. And I think that also, like, you know, like, you don't hear Lil Yachty's music at the club.
No, and also I'd be hard-pressed to name a song off of the last Lil Yachty album. The best Lil Yachty songs remain the early Lil Yachty songs. And I feel like I don't necessarily...
And his guest verses, which have sort of propelled him through not putting out much music.
I'd like to
on
see a featuring Lil Yachty compilation. Where's that?
Get at us, SoundCloud
yeah,
DJs.
Seriously, someone hit us with
Fader
that.
Fader will post that. Yeah. Right, Naomi?
Yeah, that's an instant post.
Okay, great.
Stamp of approval.
So the interesting thing about Yachty's generation is, I think the conservative counterargument to that is like, well, Nas was 17 when he made Illmatic, or 18, or whatever he was, you know?
But he had a different upbringing.
That's what I'm saying.
And it was a different time in America.
And, like, in a sense, when Nas was making Illmatic, right, you had to work incredibly hard to get heard and to break your way into this relatively small and, like, small world industry. I mean, hip-hop at that point was an incredibly small world. Hip-hop at this point is literal lingua franca of global pop culture, and it's also among the most fluid of art forms in that you can literally take a guy like Yachty, who was, like, rotting away in some community college or local college dorm room, and then all of a sudden he's at Le Bain like 3 months later with a major, major song. And that's not something that was available previously. And so I always feel like I want to say to the conservatives, like, if you had this set of rules instead of the set of rules that you grew up with, you might make these decisions as well. And you wouldn't judge that, you know, you wouldn't judge people for making those same decisions. That said, hearing Lil Yachty in a Target ad covering It Takes Two or remaking It Takes Two was still a jolt to my open ears. Still strange. I'm not sure if it's good or not. Doesn't matter. Still not sure if it's good. It's like 65% good, maybe 70%.
Pretty high.
Yeah, that's like, you know, not 90, but it's not 50.
I'm happy to see Michael made it on TV. Sure. For sure. That's my only definitive opinion about it. Everything else is like, I'm happy to leave the question.
But it will be interesting to see Yachty's, you know, finishing up his, what's supposed to be his real debut album, tentatively titled Teenage Emotions, which, great title. And it'll be interesting to see how much work goes into making sure there's a radio hit on there.
Is it going to be called Teenage Emotions, : the Joe Coscarelli story?
It could be.
And can it sustain can you sustain a career just from that kind of initial, you know, and I think you probably can, you know, and this is kind of like back to my sort of like, things take a long time to percolate into the mainstream. And then once you have a mainstream salesperson that you can is cuddly enough to count on, like, mm-hmm. maybe you don't let them go.
Also,
but it'll be interesting to see how he continues to evolve this narrative about himself.
Also, the question is, when you say maintain a career, I start thinking about what kind of career and what are the different kinds of careers, because I think rap stardom used to be pretty unidirectional, and I think there are so many different ways to be a rap star now. And again, earlier, just before you got here, I was like offhandedly saying like Yachty is like Riff Raff, and I would never say like Riff Raff's career is like the goal for anyone, but the fact is right now Riff Raff is in some college town performing for 3,000 people and making $30,000 to $40,000 a show, and he's having a great life and he's selling merch and he's doing well in his own strange space. If that's what the future holds for Yachty, that's not a bad look. My suspicion is it actually is potentially much bigger than that, and also weirdly less stable. Like, I think Yachty will have, like, these very weird peaks where it's like I'm in this ad campaign or I have this strange hit that kind of, like, weirdly wound up at the top of the Billboard chart. But I don't know if in between those peaks there's going to be, like, what Future has, which is, like, Future is just always there. I don't know if Yachty's going to always be there. His thing is so idiosyncratic that I see it as a series of spikes more than, like, a plateau.
And if he sees that up and down as, like, a non-failure and then stays positive about it, then I think that gets to be as true as he wants it to be, which is kind of cool.
Oh, he'll be positive.
Yes, I think, yes. We can count on that.
Yes. So are we ready now to talk about post Lil Yachty Atlanta rap?
What's next?
Oh my God, it's March 2nd, 2017. Like, whatever. It's over. We're done. We're
Yachty
done with that.
Old news. He's basically Nas.
Yo, we're off that.
That literally was last year South by Southwest. So, you know,
it's
my
done.
My emotional.
Are you even going to let him into Fader Fort this year? Like, will he actually just be banned from Fader Fort this year?
No, he's going to be there.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, you could just DQ him at the door.
I think that paperwork came in.
So okay. All right. You heard it here first. If you guys are really in the mood to be advertised to, let's listen to a little bit of Lil Yachty featuring Carly Rae Jepsen and Mike Will Made It, It Takes Two, for Target. Not an advertiser. that I know of.
I want to rock right now. Yeah. I'm Lil Yachty and I'm down if you're down. Yeah. I'm not the most lyrical kid known. No. But I'm known to keep the party going. Because my team the love is brightest and flyest. King of the teams, I speak to all ages. We in sync while going through all phases. Positivity is what made us famous. Well, so much endurance, I should have ran track. Sounds so good, promise you'll get a plaque. Because it takes two to carry all the big things. It takes two to end up with a shiny ring. Because it takes two to end up with the final things. If you rush through the field, you might miss the better scenes.
So, speaking of the post-Yachty generation, the generation that's probably so fed up with all the attention that Yachty is getting, and they're like, we do this. Let's talk about Saw Baby. Pull Up With A Stick is a song that is slowly becoming, or probably quickly becoming, incredibly ubiquitous, and that meshes up all your favorite aspects of different forms of Atlanta rap. It has the sweet, childlike melodies of Lil Yachty. It has the aggressive, gun-friendly lyrics of a thug, perhaps. It has the atmospheric, floaty aspect to some of Future's music.
It has the deadpan and the slang of 21 Savage.
It's maybe he's Slaughter Gang. Maybe he's not Slaughter Gang. Like, can you, Naomi, is he Slaughter Gang? Do we even know? He shouts out Slaughter Gang.
I could not tell you.
It's a franchise. It's a Slaughter Gang franchise.
It's a franchise.
It's a franchise.
No, I mean, this song is so weird because it, like, almost sounds for a moment like he's, like, doing 21 Savage karaoke, and then it almost sounds for a moment like he's, like, riffing on a Thug mixtape track from last year, like Pull Up With A Stick is Pull Up On A Kid, or is it not? Like, and it's sort of hard to tell where that line between just sort of, like, admiring something else and singing along with something else you already like and then creating something of your own exists, or if it matters.
Like my man Virgil Abloh said, everything in quotes, 2017. So why are we even worried about all this? We're going to stop talking about Saw Baby. We're going to let you listen to Pull Up With A Stick. And that's the end of the podcast.
I'm going to eat in life, no forgetting. Fuck a friend. Bitch, I'm with them all. You can't get in.
All right, we've pulled up with all the sticks. Thanks for listening to New York Times Popcast. Thank you to my guests, Naomi Zeigner and Joe Coscarelli. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us any of your deep thoughts and feelings at podcast@nytimes.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, anywhere you get your audio content. Our producer is Vanessa Romo. We'll be back next week.
If your family's like mine, they've got a lot going on. Help them manage with new cognitive health supplements for kids. New lollipops help kids focus on homework or chill out for a sec. Get lollipops at Olly.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.